it's been a very awakening time for fellowship. People have come up to me, the letters I've received, and just people have talking to me. People are taking out people to dinner. They're taking their wives out to dinner. They're sending flowers. You know, wives are getting dressed up when people come home. And so I have just a cornucopia of just of it's like 95% like right on, and only like 2% say don't talk about me. I'm gonna talk about you. But I'm glad that we're in the last part of the series, part 4 of 4. Today's title is called How to Affair Proof Your Marriage. And it's so wonderful. And if you're noticing these plants next to me, they're a visual presentation. You're saying, man, some are beautiful and some are bad. Well, that's how some marriages are. Beautiful. Horrible. If you're into this nature stuff, and then you're weird. But for most of us normal people, you know, for those that can't see, you know, they have horrible. Now, you know that it takes time. And thank you, Guillermo Chavez, for the flowers. But, you know, check this out. It's so wonderful. Someone had to plant and water. Someone had to put the seed. Someone had to cultivate it. Someone has to get involved in the agriculture of things. And someone had to organize this. This is how beautiful. In marriage, it's a cultivation process. It's a partnership. It's an event. Here, the heck is that? And yet, that's how some marriages are. And this is what we're going to talk about, how to affair-proof your marriages. And so, you know, I'm glad because our congregation has been going through some kind of a spiritual catharsis. They're examining themselves, and you should see the picture I have from over here. All for the last 3 weeks, I've been seeing wives and husbands hitting each other like, see? And I just want to let you know that people behind you see you, you know, and they're watching you. And so, you know, and I just want to let you know that in marriage, you know, it's like a tango, you know. It takes two to tango. It takes two. In marriage, it takes two. And so don't do this. Well, you can do it, but, you know, be cool about it. Maybe you start using your leg now, you know. But it takes two. Now, in reading, in studying for this particular chapter, the affair proof of marriages, I want to start off with the Songs of Solomon first. I want you to go to the Songs of Solomon, chapter 7. It's in the Old Testament. It's right after Proverbs and right before Isaiah. Songs of Solomon, chapter 7. If you're single, bear with us. Because the whole chapter of Solomon is called the Coochie Coochie chapter. It's just so, it's a poetical gesture of a woman, the beloved, and her husband. And when we go through all this, I invite you all, married people, to, as we go through the Songs of Solomon, hopefully to romanticize, hopefully to incinerate and fuel your marriage. They can get back into a hotness, an erotic, physical, exciting adventure. Chapter 7, remember now, this is poetical. How beautiful are your feet in sandals, O prince daughter? The curves of your thighs are like jewels, the work of the hands of a skillful workman. Your navel is a rounded goblet which lacks no blended beverage. Your waist is a heap of wheat set about with lilies. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle. Your neck is like an ivory tower. Your eyes like the pools in Heshbon by the gate of Bath, of Bathrabim. Your nose is like the tower of Lebanon, which looks towards Damascus. I shared earlier, I don't know if the nose is big or it's just beautiful. Since I never seen the tower of Lebanon, I imagine it's just big. But he says it's beautiful, baby. Your head crowns you like Mount Carmel. And the hair of your head is like purple. The king is held captive by his tresses. How fair and how pleasant you are, O love, with your delights. The stature of yours is like a palm tree, and your breast like its clusters. I said, I will go up to the palm tree and I will take hold of his branches. Let now your breast be like clusters of the vine, the fragrance of your breath like apples, and the roof of your mouth like the best wine. I can go on and on. This is the whole Coochie Coochie chapter. Now, people stay away from Coochie Coochie things because it's taboo. But I want you to know that it is taboo when there's abnormality, when there's immoral, coochie coochie. God gave us healthy, wholesome coochie coochie. Now, for those who don't know coochie coochie, you know, it's coochie coochie, you know, that's what it means. To have a loving physical relationship with your wife and your husband, your legal husband and wife. You see, nobody talks about those taboos, and I'm not going to be an adventurer and inventor and say, like, we're going to break taboos. No. But you see, God gave us drives as human beings. His creation, He gave us the drive for air. We need air to breathe. And then water and food. And the fourth drive that He gave us bladder and bowel movement necessities. The fifth one is the sexual drive. See, it comes into play. God wants us in a healthy way to enjoy the pleasurable, erotical communion between two people, husband and wife. The book of Psalms of Solomon speaks about that. We are warned in the book of Proverbs chapter 6. He speaks of the husbands. He says, drink from your own cisterns. My son, why should you go out onto the street and drink from other people's water wells when you have your own? He says, stay with the wife of your youth. Let her breast satisfy you all day long. See, God did not invent the pleasurable bondage. God gave us the drive. You see, if something is wrong with a very expensive car, let's say you buy a very expensive, luxurious, precision car. You need a tune-up. You're not going to take it to the Shell station across the street for $29.95. You're going to take it to a specialist that deals with that high-performance engine. It'll be very stupid on our part or your part if you own the car. And if you go to Joe's Transmission, instead of taking it to the manufacturer because they know they have mechanics that can handle the right tools, the right precision, the right knowledge of the car. Same thing when something's wrong with a marriage. You go straight to the architect and the director of marriage, God Himself. He gave us a prescription what to do. Now, Dr. McGinnis is a doctor, he's a sex therapist, a Christian therapist, my understanding. I don't know him, I haven't read any of his books. All I have is a quotation that I saw in a Knight Rider news service. A question was asked, Dr. McGinnis, in your opinion, what is the reason people commit adultery and they have affairs? Here's what he said. Married people seek out or succumb to affairs when they feel devalued and less than fully alive. They are bored, overburdened. It amounts to being very lonely, and it happens in a household full of kids and a babbling spouse in which there is a back-breaking schedule of fun things to do. People who have affairs have the child's deep longing to be touched, caressed, held, hugged, and kissed, whether they can admit it or not. They want surprises. I agree with him. This is what I call the coochie coochie. See, he's a doctor. He explains it very, 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 very wonderful. Eloquently, I think. But I'm not a doctor. For me, when I say, can you interpret that? Oh, that's coochie coochie stuff. It's the caressing. It's that tenderness. No matter how old we are, we desire to be touched and loved by someone else. We desire someone's hands to go around and touch us, kisses around our neck, even in our old age. More than ever in our old age, we need that affirmation and confirmation. All of us need that. We need that love. I remind, in some weddings that I perform, I remind them of the story. You've probably heard it. For the benefit of those that have not heard it, act like you haven't heard it. There's a scene in The Fiddler on the Roof. Tibby is the main star. He's a Jewish man. He's a milkman in a little town in Russia. He has five daughters, and all of a sudden, all his daughters are getting married. Not in accordance to the way he pictured the girls to have married. One married a revolutionary, another married a guy who has no money, and it was horrible. Finally, when all the children are getting married, except for the two little ones, Golda, his wife, a little chubby, married, had been married with him like over 30 years. They're there in the kitchen. They got to move out because the Russians are coming to kill them and destroy them. And they're going to move out. And finally, Golda asked this question. Tivye, do you love me? Very, very tender. Very tender. Do you love me, Tivye? Hey, I work for you every day, from sundown to sunup. Tivye, Golda says, do you love me? I gave you 5 children. I love you. And he finally grabs him. Do you love me? That was the question. Do you love me? I don't care about anything else. Do you love me? And Tivye got the message. And he says, Golda, I love you. See, when you don't see that growing up, when you don't see it growing up, when your children don't see you hugging your wife, careful. You're telegraphing your children, there's no love in the house. You see, coochie coochie is healthy. And you know what I mean, men. And I'm not trying to be in any way crass or vulgar. But acknowledge, men. Hey, what's for dinner? Pow, yeah. You know that. Maybe you don't do it because you're a Christian man. We all long to be touched. This is a song by Bob Dylan. I'm a Bob Dylan fan. I know I'm not supposed to. Maybe I'm going to go to hell. But I'm honest. I love Bob Dylan music. I don't agree with some of the stuff he says, but I love his music. Especially from the mid-60s. There's a song that really tears me apart. He says, remember that song? She says, she walks, yes, like a woman. She talks, yes, like a woman. She makes love, just like a woman. But she breaks down like a what? Like a little girl. That's true. See, it doesn't matter how tough the woman looks. Don't open the door for me. I can do it. I can work overtime too. You know, beyond that, God tells me they're women. Behind the power suits, behind all the short hair, behind all the no earrings and all that stuff, behind all that, there's a woman. And she longs and desires to be caressed and touched. The doctor goes on. He says, they want surprises. That might mean a little sentimental, unexpected gift every once in a while. More important, it is a dependable gift of time and caring. The present of shared ideas, experiences, stories, nonsense, and games, including sexual games. Oh. Ooh. They want the world to butt out. They want a loving friend, a pal who isn't judgmental. They want someone to convince them they're still loved, lovable, and very special. For a little while, now and then, they want out from under the grown-up responsibilities. They have become predictable, dreary, and difficult. They want a friend, someone they can trust, someone they can unload and talk and communicate. What I'm about to share this morning is nothing that I take no credit for it. I've took pieces and advisements and I saw articles and the Word of God and experience, and I add it all into one presentable capsule to you. But I have no credit to this because I'm still learning how to be a husband. I'm trying to open a door for my wife on her car. It's not in me to open the door. My response is, open your own door. I've been married with you too long. Just press the button, open the door. But see, as we see in a moment, love is not an emotion. Love is an action. In love, in partnership, in marriage, you give till you can take. You cannot take and take and take, not give, give, give. Because if you only take and you only take, you're going to end up with this. You see, you need to give, plant, water, cultivate. You need to do that so you can appreciate it. Partnership. It's a partnership of two people getting together, working together. So these principles, they're not exhaust all the principles. These are just some. They are very important. Obviously, there's more, but these are the most important ones. But I take no credit for it because I'm still learning how to be a husband after 20 years. Because I'm putting to practice what I'm reading, man. I asked my wife, you know, I take her out and I said, what are your biggest fears? What's wrong with anything that you see wrong? How can I change? You know, I wish there was a way that somehow that she can give me some special glasses. And she can say, Punch, can you put these glasses on? They're mine. And you will feel and see what I see. And as soon as I put them on, and I will see her world, her pains, her doubts, her concerns, her anguishes. Our children are growing up. They might be 17 years old. That's very traumatic to some parents. They're about to leave home. One more year with them, and they graduate, and they're going on their way to college. College already approved our girls, and they're going. One more year. That's very traumatic for a wife. For me, they will always be my little girls, but for my wife, they're going to be gone. This is it. One year left. And then they're going out to womanhood, and they get married. And that's her concern. She's praying that she doesn't, they don't marry some gorilla who's going to hit them or mistreat them. That's her concern. And they're not even in high school yet. They're not. And that's her fears. But you see, it isn't until I put her glasses on that I can understand what I see. An old Indian proverb says, you don't know my life until you wear my moccasins. And that is so true. In marriage, you got to see the other side. And that is what you will call communication and transmission in marriage. The first thing that I would like to give you a principle, if you're recently married, been married for a long time, but especially if you've been married under 5 years, number one, it will apply to you very seriously. Number one principle to affair-proof your marriage, don't compare your spouse to someone else. Number one. I did that in our first year. That was the last time I said it. I said, you know, why don't you keep the house up like so-and-so? Why don't you marry her? You married me. Yeah, well, I was just thinking. You know? Some husbands, you know, we want to have, you know, like Sharon Stone, Mother Teresa, and Betty Crocker all put into one. But man, let me tell you, that's a dream. No two marriages are alike. Therefore, you cannot compare yours to others. This negative exercise will always breed negative results. Because if you compare yourself to someone, and if that someone is more superior than you, you're going to feel deflated, and you're going to feel so awkward and discouraged that you're not going to handle it. Or if you compare yourself to some dingbat, the result will be that you cream yourself and you become complacent, like, I'm not that bad. But that result is negative. Both are negatives. Your marriage is unique, therefore incomparable. Your partner is unique. You don't need another partner. No great marriages just happens. When I officiate a wedding, I look at this couple, and they're looking at each other, and they're just looking at each, winking and doing this. And some people whisper, you know, one of these, I'm going to mic them so we can hear what they're saying. But if they're like me, you know, when I was getting married, I was telling them I wanted the same thing. I would go, Hawaii tonight. I didn't care about, you know, I love the wedding and everything, but I was just thinking about Outrigger Hotel, Hawaii, and that's all I was thinking. I know you guys are very devoted Christians, you don't think that way, but I'm a young Christian, forgive me. And then they come back from their honeymoon, and they still, everything's okay. And then after the honeymoon wears down, remember, you know that. No great marriage just happens. You need cultivation, courage, persistence, determination, commitment. Every time you look at your neighbor's yard, the yard looks greener. Let me tell you, your neighbor works at that yard. He puts fertilizer, he waters, he cultivates, he takes care of it. You see him on Sunday mornings or Saturday mornings. Your neighbor, the ones that have the green grass all the time, even in winter. But you see him every Saturday, man. Every Saturday, man. Every single day. He's working on it. I don't have that. I have that in my yard. No, not that bad. But it's not this. That's right. No great marriage just happens. You need commitment. The second thing, don't set your own traps. Many affairs are the result of falling into our own self-made, self-baited traps. We create them. First of all, number one, consider your friends. It's very important that you understand who your friends are. We live in a society where flirting is norm, where people take lightly affairs. They're watching TV soaps, and adultery is a common thing. They take very lightly about that. those people that they don't consider marriage a true marriage foundation for our society, they're not your friends. They're not healthy for you. Because we know that most affairs take place between close friends, don't we? You see, there's two couples get together and they're always buddy-buddy. They're newlyweds, and or they have one baby and they have one baby and we have thing in common and we go out, or three couples go out. And eventually, sometimes there's loose talk about sex and it breaks down the protective walls. And then it piques the curiosity and it catches into the mystery. And then it catches into the coochie-coochie secrecy. And all of a sudden, in conversation, you know, one wife will say, "Oh, you know, Philip is always lazy. You know, we have not been passionate for the last 2 months." Boom, she said something. The people around, especially other men, pick it up immediately. And the names are fictitious, okay? And Philip says, Susan's like me. Because Mary is neglecting me. See, you pick it up. And then when you gather, you know, you break the fellowship and you go to get coffee and you go see that. Well, I understand that your husband is not. I know what you're going through because me too. No, yes. You see, now you have something in common. You know, it is common that a woman experienced double tragedy when her husband committed an affair with who? With a best friend. You need to be very careful that if you have that kind of fellowship, I encourage you, have that fellowship, but protect those walls. Don't talk about sex. Leave sex at home. Sex is only to be discussed between you, your wife, or your spouse, your husband, and God. That's all. Or if you permit, a therapist, marriage therapist, because there are such dysfunctional sex obstacles in marriage, and that's valid. And you need to speak to that. But do not broadcast it. Everybody needs to know. Because you're going to create problems for yourself. So many affairs take place between close friends. So because the more open and transparent you are, the high level of conversation has to occur, and is very dangerous. Another trap that we set for ourselves is in the workplace, at the office. Now, I have to share something with you, okay? Because this is not in any books. This is what I know. Because I've been married 20 years and I worked all my life ever since I was 9 years old. Ever since 1962. In 1963, November the 22nd, I made around $45. $45, $1963. I was only like around, I was 11 years old. 11 years old. And I made $33, $1963. That's when they shot President Kennedy. And I sold the 8-star Herald Examiner. I sold all kinds of them. So I've been working all my life, and I've been at workplaces. And so I know. And something that I've noticed, because I've been married 20 years. Now, when you go to work, I bet you 100 to 1 that you do not see that person get out of bed. You only see that person at work and their best. No children. Nothing burning on the stove, the microwave popping popcorn, and the children crying and sick. You don't see all that. All you see is a power suit. They smell good, look good, talk good, and they know about the same business, and you have a relationship. That's what they see at work. You see a nice, wonderful looking woman with a power suit on. She looks good, smells good, talks good. How wonderful. But you see, I've been married 20 years, and nothing against my wife. I love her dearly now. Okay, notice I have to say that first. I have never yet seen anybody waking up looking good, smelling good. In fact, when they get up, the alarm goes on, and you don't even know whether they're mummies or what is it. They get up, their hair is a mess, they have body odors, their breath smells, they don't have no makeup on. But they walk into this thing called a bathroom. Half an hour later, ba-ba! Whoa! And they come out and they go to work. But I've seen how she looks before she went to work. But you see, other men have not seen her that way. And all they see is, if my wife's to work in the workplace, all they see is my wife dressed up, looking good, smelling good. But I know the other. You see, and that is part of the ignorance cloud surrounding the affairs that spawn in the office. Because they're problem free. There's no kids, there's no HMOs, there's no broken refrigerators, You know what I'm saying? There's no bills or nothing. It's just you and me. Look at each other. Oh. More coffee? Same place? Yes. Ooh, see you there. You know? I seen that yesterday. We seen it. I see it all the time. But it happens in the office. It's no secret. Many affairs happen in the office. Sexual favors often influence contracts and affect promotions. We know that. If you don't believe that, you live in a cave. For men, you must avoid the magazines and entertainment that lowers your inhibitions. That's a must. You have to stop. If you have this sickness, it's a disease, it's sin of looking at magazines or anything, any information, entertainment that lowers your inhibitions, you cannot have a healthy marriage. Same way goes to the ladies. And I say ladies because that's the majority that stay home and watch TV soaps. Uh-oh. Yes, TV soaps. The problem with TV soaps is that it gives a distorted drama of romance, sexuality, infidelity, affairs, abortions, and it encourages comparisons and dissatisfaction, and it gives it a distorted view of what life is really about. Hey, I watch one day. See, I'm up on Mondays. I sacrifice myself. It is. It's a sacrifice. Sit there and, oh, baby, you left me. I love you. You know, but you're married. I love you. And all those guys are handsome, all of them, not a blemish. And they take their shirt, you know. And I remember watching soaps, you know, back like 1970, when I used to work for the county, they used to watch the soaps. And back in 74 when I started, and it was just love, and the camera will fade away, you know, and your imagination will take over. Hey, your imagination will take over now. They rip the t-shirt, and all these muscles come out. Right? You've seen that. And they make passionate kissing and love and the tonguing in there now, man. And they get it on, and you're a housewife there, you know, with a burrito watching it. True? And you look at your house, it's all dirty, and it's not like the set. And all these girls always get these handsome guys. And then 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock comes around, and here comes your husband.
Hey, honey.
Got any food? And you look at him, and you look at the guy in television, you look at your husband, and then you say, why am I doing with you? Where is the romance? Where is the romance? And the husband says, forget the romance. Let me take a bite of your burrito. I'm hungry. Right? True. Right? So, subconsciously and unconsciously, what happens is you begin to wonder why your spouse is the way he is. Same way, if you are men and watching all these distorted magazines that lower the inhibitions of man and numbs you and anesthetizes you, and you want your wife to look exactly like some of these pictures, and if she had two kids, that's stupidly impossible. You can't do that. I hear men tell me, Pon, she's not like she used to be. And you know, and I ask politely because I'm trying to be patient. How long have you been married? Oh, I've been married 25 years. How many kids do you have? We have three. And you want your wife to look like she was 25 years ago? Yeah. I feel like saying, God, why? And I hear the Lord, for the fun of it. I don't understand. How idiotic. And many men turn in their wives like their vehicles. And they marry at 21, 22, 23. Silly. I stop there. The third thing is refuse to saw the sawdust. Sawdust cannot be resawn. The past is now history and it cannot be relived. If I have to, myself personally, if I have to live and depend on the past, I will kill myself. If I have to be reminded of my past before Jesus Christ came and redeemed me, I will kill myself. I will not survive at the age of I would say, 29. At the rate that I was living, the life that I was living, it was a hard life. Alcoholism, drugs, selling them, pushing them, getting involved with all kinds of sexual weirdness. See, I've said it from the pulpit. I am ashamed to say it. I'm not proud of it. But I share it with you so that you can see me as an example of redemption. I was a sexual deviant. I'm ashamed. But I tell you what, God has set me free. You can tell me about my past. You can point the finger. I remember him. And I have to take with it. And I have to live with it. There are people who remember my past. They know me. I can either do two things. I can either learn from it, build on it, and give it to God. Or else, I can park it in my driveway every time. Past, park right here. See, the past is a bully. It will destroy you. It will remind you of things in the past. All of us here, all of us have an irrevocable past. All of us here. If all of us had the opportunity, if somehow you had a magical wand and says, listen, this wand can give you one thing. You can take you back to the past. All of us will go back to the past and change a couple of things, wouldn't we? If only we can change the times. If we can only return and go back. But we can't. We can't do that. One writer said this, no reminders, any reminders from yourself or others of the mistakes of the past will only victimize you and rendering you incapable of acting constructively. There's a lady by the name of Louisa Tarkinson. She wrote a wonderful poem. The poem about, she cries out, she says, I wish there was some place that we can go and take all our diseases, our bankruptcies, and deposit them and throw them away. I'm giving her no credit. Let me read her poem. I wish there was some wonderful place called the land of beginning again, where all of our past mistakes and heartaches and all of our poor selfish grief could be dropped like a shabby old coat at the door and never be put on again. I agree with her. I wish there was a place called the wonderful land of beginning again, but unfortunately there is not. No amount of effort can recall the stone already thrown. No amount of regret can retract the hurtful words once spoken. No amount of sorrow can undo the damage an affair does to your marriage. No amount of tears can change the adultery into the act of purity. No amount of apologizing will reform the act of neglect. No pen can unwrite what has already been written. There is no way to put that spilled milk back into the bottle. No one can possibly gather again the feathers that have been blown away. And no amount of prayer or pious living is going to undo the damage caused by undisciplined actions and indulgence. You have a choice. You can either learn from it, build on it, and give it to God, or you can park it, rehearse it, and be seduced and hurt by the past. When people use their past, they will use that as an excuse, as a scapegoat for all their ills in their marriages. The past is the past. Listen, either Jesus has come into your life and cleansed you, or he has not cleansed you at all. There's all sufficiency in Jesus Christ. You have to understand that. Oh, Jesus, I'm a Christian, but you know, I've had an experience in my past and I have not. No. What you're saying is the sufficiency of Jesus Christ, his blood upon the cross, was insufficient to cleanse you completely. But the Bible declares graphically and honestly, says this, you are born again. All things have been what? Passed on. What kind of things are now coming? New things. You have been born again. You are no longer the same creature. You are now born again. Nothing else matters. To depend upon the past is to park the past and put it in the driveway and wake up every morning and have been seduced by the past, hurt by the past, and becomes a bully every time you want to do something because the past will remind you of what you were. I am justified. I am washed. I am separated. Jesus came into my life. He saved me. I'm born again. You see, it's healthy. Do I still think about the past? Yes. But does it drive me, motivate me, pressure me, and paralyzes me? No more. For Jesus has come to set me free. I'm reminded of the past. I wish I can change the past, but I cannot change the past. But I do know one thing. My children have never seen their father hit their mother. My children have never seen their father vomiting in the toilet or outside the car. My children have never seen me drinking. My children have never seen me smoking weed, selling weed. My children have never seen or heard me make a sly remark against their mother. My friends, past is the past. It's time to grow a new harvest. I lived like this, but ever since I came to Jesus, that's all I want to be. You can tell me, I remember the way you were. Yeah, but you know what? God remembers the way this is. For God remembers our sin no more. Remember, when I came to Jesus, Jesus came into my life and he put a sign in my past. No fishing allowed.
If you want to go fishing, that's your problem. But God has forgiven me. I cannot live on the past. Because if I live on the past, I'm telling you, I will kill myself. I can't do that. The past is the past. I live for today. I'm in the hands of God tomorrow. God taketh away, God giveth away. It's God. Therefore, do not sow the sawdust anymore. The 15th, 16th, 17th, whatever, if you're nine, I don't even know what numbers they are. The next thing is you got to look through your partner's glasses. You got to look through your partner's glasses, like I was sharing earlier. Men and women have many emotional and temperamental differences. If you don't know by now, duh. You don't have to be married to know they have different temperamental. They're different. You must courageously ask your partner how she feels or how he feels, not just how you feel. Some man says, I feel good, so everything must be all right. No, not necessarily. That is the great mistake of misunderstood truth. You cannot assume you both feel the same way in that because your needs are already met. Your wives will not be met. That is a misunderstood truth. When you have misunderstanding, you have miscommunication. When you have miscommunication, you're going to receive the wrong message. When you have the wrong message, you're going to act and you're going to react according to that message. And then you have problems. You have no oral transmission. You have no communication. I read a story once about misunderstood truth. I like to read it for you. It's very comical. There was a nice little incontinent. She was planning a week's vacation in Florida at a particular campground, but she wanted to make sure of the accommodations first. Foremost in her mind were toilet facilities. For having a problem with the urinary control, she was fearful others might know, and she could not bring herself to write the word toilet in the letter. After considerable deliberation, she settled on bathroom commode. But when she wrote that down, it still sounded too suspicious, so she wrote the letter to the campground and referred to the bathroom commode as the BC. Does the campground have its own BC, is what she actually wrote. The campground owner was baffled by the initials BC. What does BC mean? So he showed the letter around to several campers, but they could not decipher it either. Finally, the owner figured she must be referring to the location of the local Baptist church. So he sat down and wrote, "Dear Madam, I regret very much the delay in answering your letter, but now I take pleasure in informing you that a BC is located 9 miles north of the campground. And this BC is capable of seating 250 people at one time. I admit it is quite a distance away if you are in the habit of going regularly. But no doubt you will be pleased to know that a great number of people take their lunches along and make a day of it. They usually arrive early and stay late. The last time my wife and I went was 6 years ago. And it was so crowded we had to stand up the whole time we were there. I would like to say it pains me very much not to be able to go more regularly, but it's surely no lack of my desire on my part. As we grow older, it seems to be more of an effort, particularly in cold weather. If you decide to come to our campground, perhaps I could go with you for the first time to the BC. I can sit with you and introduce you to all the other folks that are sitting down. Remember, this is a friendly community." My friends, that's miscommunication. It happens in marriages. We don't communicate, therefore we miscommunicate, and we send the wrong message. The 5th, 7th, 8th, 9th, whatever it is, is activate love by your own actions. Did you know that love is the only emotion that isn't natural? Love has to be learned. Love is a skill. Love involves giving. You get love by giving and not demanding it. It is a choice expressed in action and backed up by action. Love is an art that is learned and is a discipline that is practiced. Like any skill, vocation, we need discipline, concentration, commitment, and patience. Love actions are a matter of choice. These actions are not dependent on our feelings. We do not do what we do because we feel the way we feel. We feel the way we feel because we do what we do. A lady came up to a lawyer. You know, she was spurned by her husband, cheating husband, you know. And so she went to the lawyer. She goes, "Lawyer," he says, to attorney, he says, "I want to mess my husband up. Just the way he messed me up, I want to just jack him up." And the Christian lawyer said, "You really want to jack him up? I want to mess him up. Legally mess him up. Everything. What do you think? Well, I have a scheme. Why don't you go back home and tell him you're sorry? And then woo him, kiss him. Tell him how wonderful man he is. Iron his shirts, cook for him. And then when he finally thinks that you capitulated, and then just let him off the hook and tell him, 'Sucker, I hate you and I'm walking out on you. And she said, oh, I love it. I love it. So she went home and she goes, she said, by the way, give me a call in 2 weeks. So she goes home and the doctor, the lawyer doesn't hear from her in 2 weeks. So he calls her at home. Hello, Chelsea, are you going to follow the suit? Oh, no, I'm in love. What do you mean, what happened? Well, I started doing what you told me to do, and then he reacted to it, and then he started hugging me too, and then he started sending me flowers and chocolates, and giving me massages, and I realized that he loves me. You see, she had no emotions to love this man. She was going with the wrong motive, but she put action to work. I'm telling you, I don't want to open the door to my wife's car. That's not in me, man. I've known her for 24 years. Sometimes you're like, open your own door. But you see, love is motivated by action. I'm in love with Christ. He is the reason why I do the things I do, which is my next illustration. Start your own affair at home with Jesus. Husbands, have an affair with Christ. Ladies, have an affair with Jesus. That is the only affair that is permitted in the household. That is the only one. Because I know the more my wife falls in love with Jesus, I'm going to receive all the blessings. And the more I'm in love with Jesus, my wife is going to benefit. He is the reason. He is the motivator. He is the fulcrum of everything that I do. Everything I do in marriage is because of Him. We cannot be angry more than 7 minutes in our household. Man, there was a time when we would get angry and would not speak for a day, day and a half. It's been like 10 years now that we cannot stay angry more than 7, and we get angry for not getting angry more than 7 minutes. Because we can't, you see? We love Christ. And Christ is the Prince of Peace. He is not going to negate His love. For God is love, and those who love God know that God is love. For those who do not know God don't know what love is. And those who know God, 1 John 4, 7 and 8. Therefore, because I know God is the God of love, and as I represent God and He loves me, He speaks to me and tells me, that wasn't cool what you did. That was totally uncalled for, Ponce. And you know what? I'm telling you, I get angry. Because God speaks to me in such a way. And I go back and I turn. My flesh doesn't want to apologize. You understand what I'm saying? My flesh does not want to apologize. But I submit to the Lordship of Christ. I'm sorry. It doesn't even sound healthy, you know? I'm sorry. It's my fault. And my heart is crying out, but it was your fault to begin with. But I don't say that. I only submit myself as what God wants me to do. You know that the passivity that takes place when those words come out, I'm sorry? Someone who's in love with Jesus, he gets angry because she feels she should have been obedient before I was. So now we fight to see who can apologize sooner. Why? Because we have an affair with Jesus Christ. Remember what Jesus said in Matthew 10:34? If you love father, mother, daughter, children, wife, husband more than me, you're not worthy to follow me. He wasn't saying that you are to divorce somebody. He was just saying, love me first. And then you will be able to love your mother, your father, and your wife, and your husband, and your children. Start your own affair. Turn with me as we close to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. In chapter 3, Peter, now many people, even Christians, somehow because of our culture and tradition and the way we were brought up, they say that Peter was the first pope. Historically and biblically, Peter was just a fisherman. Even when somebody bowed down to him, Cornelius bowed down to him, remember? He bowed down and Peter said, Cornelius, don't bow down to me, for I'm just a mere man like you, man. I'm just a homie like you. Stand out. Remember that? Now, he was married. The Bible says that in the Gospels that when they went to Capernaum, he lived in Capernaum by Galilee, that his mother-in-law was sick with a fever, and Jesus walked into the house, and so Jesus being hungry, and he didn't want, you know, he wanted to heal her so he can cook something for him, you know, so she healed him. And the Bible says that he was married. So he has authority to let us know what's going on. So in 1 Peter chapter 3, he speaks about submission. Submission in government, submission in business, submission in marriage, and submission in the church. The word submission is a rank and order terminology. It's not a subservient, it's not a doormat. So submissiveness here is hupo tasso, two words. Like we have in English, submarine. Sub means under, marine means water. Submarine is two words in one, submarine. The same word in the Greek for submission is hupo tasso. Hupo is a military term, means under. Tasso means rank and order. In this country, we need order. If we don't have order, we have anarchy. We have the police. So we can have order in our community. If not, we will have anarchy. So we have order. It's essential. We have submission in children, as when Jesus submitted to Joseph and Mary. We have also submission of the government. As we have in the government, Peter says this. He says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority instituted among men, whether to the king or the supreme authority or to governors. We also have divine submission. Romans 13:1. Let every soul be subject unto higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be ordained of God. And we have also church authority submission. 1 Corinthians 16:16. Paul says, submit also to everyone who works and labors with us. And 1 Peter 5:5, young people, submit yourselves to the elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility. So if we have divine submission, we have child, father, mother submission, we have government submission, divine submission, God did not allow us to have a marriage without the ordained submission, the marital submission. And this is a submission. Ephesians 5:21. Wives, submit yourselves unto your husband as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Now, if there is no order, what is the opposite of order? Chaos. Chaos, disarray, selfishness, egotistical, self-centered. And if you have no order life in a marriage, you have a man who is not a husband, you have a man who is not a father, you have a woman who is not a wife, you have a woman who is not a mother, and therefore you go into, you ever been to houses and the family is all chaotic? Kids running around and yelling and the father just sitting there, and, honey, do this, and it's just a mess. You want to say, hey, who's in charge in here? Someone has to be in charge. When the woman is in charge of the household, it's chaotic problems. You may not see them on the outside, but the undercurrent in the home is they're full of turmoil because God has not called the wives to become the husbands, the cultivators. You know, when you look at the Webster's Dictionary, you look under the word husbandry, you know what you're going to come up with? You're going to come up with this. When you first husband-man, you look at the dictionary, this is the definition. One that plows and cultivates. When you look below under husbandry, you're going to have three definitions. One, who cares of a household. Number two, one who conserves agriculture. And the other one, who has scientific control and management of domestic farm animals. In some families, all three apply. But it's number one, the care of a household, husbandry. Someone who is a master gardener, they call him a husbandman. Because he knows and how to take care of agriculture. Therefore, Christian men, and I speak to Christians only, because if you're not a Christian, you need to be a Christian first. Christian men, it is your responsibility to cultivate your garden. It's not the women's. Your woman responds. Women react to your actions. God has given us the responsibility as husbands. Husbands, love your wife. Someone may ask, well, how do we love our wives? Paul says, as Christ loved the church. How did Christ love the church? Sacrificially, willingly, lovingly. Surrender all. You have the responsibility to have this or to have that. You as husbands have the responsibility. Oh, but it's not fair, Ponch. Well, tell me about it, isn't it? I agree with you. I agree with you 20 times. I agree with you. I'm not trying to be some kind of Donahue. Come on, I'm for the women. No. Hey. I don't like it either. But in a Christian marriage, if I need to smell the fruits of my labor, it starts with me. It's ordained by God. In chapter 3, as we close, verse 7, the first thing that comes out, it says, likewise, you husbands. Likewise what? Likewise, chapter 3, verses 1, 2, and 3, and 4. Likewise, you husbands. What does that mean, likewise, husbands? Well, be like your wives. Be the hidden person of the heart. Verse 4. With the imperishable ornament, which is what? A gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. That's what He wants us to do. Likewise, you husbands, dwell with your wives with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life. The word dwelling means togetherness, unity, oneness, friendship, companionship. The word understanding, if you have a King James Version, the word for understanding is what? Knowledge. Live with them with knowledge. What is knowledge? The fact or condition of knowing something with familiarity gained through experience and association. The fact or condition of being aware of something, which means you're reasonable, cognitive, intelligent, thoughtful, considerate. And that's what God wants us husbands to consider and be thoughtful and have an intelligent, cognitive, reasonable conversation with our wives. And you said, man, never heard of that. Well, me either. When I became a Christian, that's what it is. Came with a package. Reasonable means that I have to talk with my wife. And then he says this, honor, showing respect or merited respect, is reputation and recognition, which means preference, consideration, admiration and adoration. It does not mean giving in to your wife, but it means understanding them. Warren Worsby said this in one of his books, a Christian husband needs to know his wife's moods, feelings, needs, fears and hopes. He needs to listen with his heart and share meaningful communication with her. Why? Because they're weaker vessels. Does that mean they have a mental deficiency? Absolutely not. Does that mean that they're intellectual inadequate? Absolutely not. I think some of the wives are more bright than the husbands. But it doesn't mean you have the rule over the household. For God has not created you to have that. You can run the checks, but you cannot run the home. Because if you do, you're going to have chaos in your house. But literally, they're in strength, they're physical weak. That's unquestionable. You know that. For the exception of some women there, these are gold gyms, they don't look like women anymore, you know. That's the exception. I saw a woman, man, you know, what are you doing, arm wrestling? Man. I'll stop there. But emotionally, he's speaking about this. Women are fragile, delicate, tender, petite, frail, soft, supple. You know what I mean. And because they're that vessels of that kind of delicacy, very fragile, they desire coochie-coochie time. And it's your responsibility as husbands to create this garden. It takes hard work, cultivation, irrigation, digging up, planting, watering. Oh, well, when people come around your house, how beautiful is your garden? You know, it takes a lot of work. You don't have to. Welcome to Weed City. You don't have to. It's your choice. As I ask the group to come on up right now, as we conclude our series in adultery, perhaps you've been coming throughout, and we have only like around 4 minutes left. But as the worship team sings, if you would like to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, I want you to get up from your seat and come to my right or to my left. But if your husband, a wife, and you want to dedicate yourself unto God, you can do that too, but coming to your left, my right, as we sing the song, Come As You Are.